You know, I did forget to tell you, we do have a number of new members that are in New Zealand the first Sabbath. Had a new couple attend for the first time. It was a Chinese. His wife came. She was a Buddhist. Enjoyed services. And helped her husband, who was a bit on the elderly side, to find the scriptures in the Bible. I mean, he knew where they were, but I think she was more adept as a Buddhist to find the scriptures in our Bible than he was. But she helped him out quite a bit. But he says, "I really want to be baptized. I want to be baptized by you." I says, "Right." So I said, "Tell you what, I'm going to send you a lot of literature." So I sent him some, and he's on email, and he let me know he received them. We have that experience in a number of churches. The very first Sabbath, we had a new pastor in there with somewhat of a reduced flock. It was quite unusual. We had new people showing up, and they're staying. They're not going anywhere. And they said, "Well, yeah, this is where we want to be." And so we were able to discuss openly the situation that we had within the church, and it didn't seem to bother them at all because, you know, there's a matter of the truth from the Bible. This is what kind of helps us. That's what gives us the stability. Now, God tells us about a flood that will come. It will come after the people of God, believe it or not, at the end time. I've been wanting to discuss this one with you. I think it has something to do with what we're experiencing today, not only with the flood, of course, that we see in Queensland, but the flood, the spiritual flood that it speaks about in the book of Revelation. Let's turn there to Revelation chapter 12. There are a number of floods in the Bible. Some are literal. This one here is symbolic. And it's important to understand what he is talking about here because it is going to affect the church of God in the very end time. And we know that because it is dated. I realize interpreting prophecy and is very difficult sometimes, and we're not trying to set dates, but we know that it is going to be right at the very end time when this occurs. Revelation chapter 12. Let me give you a little bit of a background about Revelation chapter 12. Revelation chapter 12 is, as most people would tend to think, is a chapter about the church. It's an inset chapter in the book of Revelation. However, the devil is mentioned as much, if not more, in Revelation chapter 12 as the church is. So one could argue the point. This is about the devil. Well, I think we better take a little different view of it. This is about the devil as pitted against the church down through history. This is what you find in Revelation chapter 12. Now, anybody reading this might become, says, "Wow, this is not good." Well, I think we've got to take the good with that which is difficult, that which is it tends to be tribulation, if I can put it that way. And it has not been fully interpreted properly for the simple reason people do not understand the scope of God's plan and what God is really doing. So it's important then to understand in the whole context, right from the very beginning, of what God is doing. I want to start in chapter 7. "And war broke out in heaven, and Michael and his angels fought with the dragon, and the dragon and his angels fought." We have a war here, folks, an angelic war that the Bible speaks of. Michael is one of the angels on God's side. The dragon and his angels, they are called angels. And they are angels because that's what they were of the original creation. They became demons after they had departed from God earlier than this. And let me just say, this is not the original war that you read about in Isaiah 14, where Lucifer says, "I will ascend to heaven," and which he did. and he was cast down, back down to this earth. And that's where you find the angels today, that is the fallen angels, the demons. They are confined or restrained to this earth for their operation. It doesn't mean that they do not have consultation with God. God is the ruler of the entire universe. And we find in the book of Job that who shows up with a meeting of his angels at a certain particular time, discussing the various affairs of the universe, if I can put it that way, is the devil. So he still goes there from time to time. And matter of fact, it says here what he perhaps does, as he did then, in the case of our man Job. He says, they did not prevail, nor was a place found for them in heaven any longer. It seems to indicate at this particular war, they don't have a place anymore. Did they before? Well, yes. The great dragon was cast out. Let me give you a time frame on this. Let's just read it. The great dragon was cast out. That serpent of old, called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. So it shows this is what he's been up to. He has deceived the whole world. That's a fact. He was cast into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. All right, he has been a deceiver. All right, this is how it reads. He has been doing this. Now, in this particular war, he is cast out. Once again, it gives an indication of the time frame of this. Then I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ have come. So now we're looking very close to a time when a decision is going to be made for Christ to return. He fought a war. Let me just say it again. This is not the original war that was fought when the devil became the adversary and was sent back down to this earth. This is yet another one. This war, it could still be in the future. Probably is. Because it says, let's describe it here. It says, once that happens, now salvation and strength, the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ have come. For the accuser of our brethren, who accused them before our God day and night, has been cast down. So you see, whenever he does go to God's throne in the heaven, what does he tend to do? Now God gives him a place. He accuses. Okay, God permits that. Did you realize you were accused before God? Sure. How do you defend yourself? Well, it tells you here what you do. And they overcame him, that is, his accusations, by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony, and they did not love their lives to the death. All right, you always appeal to Jesus Christ, who of course died for our sins. Once you've repented and your sins are being forgiven, what is the devil going to accuse you of? Oh, he can find something. That's not the point. It doesn't say we don't sin. Of course we sin. But the greater truth is with God, who says their sins have been forgiven. He doesn't accept the accusation. Now, it says they overcame him by the word of their testimony. That is, they declared where they stood. No back and forth, no wishy-washiness. They stood with God. They stood with God's word, and they were obedient to God. That's the word of their testimony. And further it says, and they did not love their lives to the death. In some cases, it was proven by people who did in the past give their lives in martyrdom for the very truth of God. This happened. Jesus said it would happen, and people did that. So the devil's accusations are wrong on three counts here, completely wrong. Therefore, rejoice, O heavens, and you who dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and the sea, for the devil has come down to you having great wrath. Now he has great wrath when he comes down this time, because, as it says here in the latter part of verse 12, because he knows that he has a short time. This is dated. Short time. We already said, now salvation and strength in the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ. Okay, that's it. We're looking for this to happen. So we have a time frame for when this occurs. Verse 13, now when the dragon saw that he had been cast to the earth, he persecuted the woman who gave birth to the male child. Once again, dates it clearly here. This is not pre-human, pre-Adam. This is not during any other time of man's history. This is the time when he has a short time, and now he comes down having great wrath. So he comes down, and what does he do? He persecutes the woman. Now, I think we understand that the Bible is, the book of Revelation is largely symbolic. It is not altogether symbolic, as some people say. Well, it's totally symbolic. It's not totally symbolic. Revelation 12 is highly symbolic. All right, so you have to understand the symbols. In some places, it's very direct, and it means exactly what it says without symbolism. But it's direct enough to where you know basically what's taking place. So when the dragon saw that he had been cast to the earth, he persecutes the woman who gave birth to the male child. Plenty of symbolism here, but I think you can get the idea of what is taking place through the symbolism that you have here. The dragon is who? The devil, very clearly. The devil. He persecutes the woman. Who's the woman? The church. Who gave birth to the male child. That's referring to Christ, who allegorically he came because of the church. And so it speaks of as if the church gave birth. The church didn't give birth in a literal sense, but he came because of the church. He died for the church, it says. The church is his bride. We have a lot of symbolism there. So it simply wants to give it, he wants to say it in this way to show simply how connected this is with the male child being Jesus, who was born. Now, he was originally, if you go all the way back to verse 2. Verse 4. It says, his tail drew a third of the stars of heaven. So happens that he got a third. Seems like that figure appears more than once in situations like this. Threw them to the earth, and the dragon stood before the woman. This is not the one we talked about before. This is prior to that. Okay, now he stands before the woman at this point. The one who was ready to give birth to devour her child as soon as it was born. She bore a male child who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron, and her child was caught up to God and to his throne. And so in a very few statements, it talks about Jesus Christ, how the devil has wanted to destroy him as a baby when he was born. We remember the story. The child grew up. His destiny was to rule all nations through the kingdom of God, that is Jesus Christ. But when they put him to death, he was resurrected and he was caught up to God and his throne. And that's where you find Jesus Christ today. Okay, so the symbolism is clear. This is not very difficult. And so we're simply putting this together. Now, verse 13, here we see the dragon at an end time setting. He's cast out cast to the earth. He's persecuting the woman here who gave birth to the male child, which tells you what? That church that he started back then, that symbolically gave birth to the male child, is still here and never quit between the time it was there until the time it is in the end time. Never ceased to exist, folks. I think I'm safe to say that from what I just read. Okay? I think you could see that in there. But the woman, now, what? We have another part of the story here. But the woman was given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness to her place, where she is nourished for a time and times and half a time from the presence of the serpent. Now, here it gets a little difficult, the symbolism. We still know the woman. Two wings of a great eagle? That's debatable as to what that might mean. I don't even want to get into that. It is a form or means by which a person, I would suspect, is transferred in some way. That she might fly into the wilderness. What's wilderness mean? It can mean a number of things, according to Bible symbolism. It can mean a literal wilderness, like a desert place, where she is nourished. Nourished meaning how? Spiritually, physically, doesn't say. For a time, times and half a time, we know what that means. We're at the end time here, that we're not talking about 1,260 years. A day for a year in prophecy, we're not talking about that at all. We're talking about a literal time, times, a year, 2 years and a half a year, 3.5 years. That's what we're talking about here, because it fits in with other time periods that are mentioned in the same way in terms of months and actual literal days. Okay, that's how we know that. From the presence of the serpent. Now that's interesting. Where might that be? Let me say very quickly here, we do not believe in the rapture. There's no way that we go for that. We believe in the resurrection of the dead when Jesus Christ returns, a resurrection of those who are still alive when Jesus Christ returns. There's plenty, and we meet him in the clouds, just like you meet him. Somebody is coming to visit you from a long distance away, and you drive out to the edge of town at a predetermined meeting place, and you meet him, and they come back to your house. It's that kind of meeting. We meet him in the clouds, and we come back down to this earth. We don't go to heaven. Nothing like that ever takes place, by the way. So I'm taking a little bit of time to explain this, because there's a lot of misunderstanding about it, and we ought to clarify as to what do we understand, perhaps what we don't understand. Some of it we don't. But from the presence of the serpent, it's very interesting. We tend to think that we have to escape somehow, go to a place in the wilderness from harm's way, physical harm's way. Now, if you looked at it in a different way, the serpent is what? He is the one who has deceived the whole world. You read that in verse 9 where it says, the great dragon was cast out, that serpent of old, who deceives the whole world. That's verse 9. So when you are away from the presence of the serpent, you are away from what he is trying to do. Now, demons, let me just say, cannot directly harm you. Now, they may stir up other people to do that, but then we have the protection of God's angels. That's always been the case. Is it necessarily physical? No, it's not necessarily physical. It says, from the presence of the serpent. So the serpent spewed water out of his mouth like a flood. Now, here's a very interesting thing. Let's get to the flood business, since we've seen floods, and we wonder, well, where do these floods come? We see what floods do. Now, we have a flood. Is he talking about a literal flood? Well, I think we know he isn't, not the floods that we have seen this week. cast out of his mouth like a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away by the flood. Now the people of Grantham and Toowoomba understand what this means, to be carried away of a flood. It's a raging torrent, in a literal flood, but that's not what it's speaking about here. But the earth helped the woman. The earth opened its mouth, swallowed up the flood, which the dragon had spewed out of his mouth. And the dragon was enraged with the woman and went to make war. It seems like he wants to make war with the people of God, wherever he can. He fails to be able to do what he wants to do here with the church. Now, so he goes to make war with the rest of her offspring who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. So there are those whom he will be permitted to go and make war on. Now, let's talk about this making war, if I can, to turn over to forward a page. Well, maybe on the same page as your own Bible here, Revelation 13, verse 4. Revelation 13, verse 4. And so they worshipped the dragon, we've already defined him, who gave authority to the beast, and they worshipped the beast, saying, who is the beast, and who is able to make war with him? That's how powerful this thing is. And he was given a mouth, speaking great things and blasphemy, and he was given authority to continue for 42 months. Now what you're going to find here, that we have a dragon, when given power to the beast, now he has authority to speak great things and authority to continue for 42 months. Verse 6, and he opened his mouth, very interesting here, in blasphemy against God to blaspheme his name, his tabernacle, and those who dwell in him. So when we talk about something came out of the mouth of the serpent, like a flood, what would that possibly be? Then if we see here how from the beast, out of his mouth, comes blasphemy against God. Verse 7, and it was granted to him, he was permitted to do this, to make war with the saints and to overcome them, and authority was given him over every tribe, tongue, and nation. And all who dwell on the earth shall worship him whose names have not been written in the book of life, Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. All right, so we have a very serious matter here. They're going to be permitted to worship the beast. They're part of a system. They're part of a church. They're part of a religion. If anyone has ears, if anyone has an ear, let him hear. Okay, in other words, try to understand what's being said here. That's what he says now. And he who leads into captivity shall go into captivity. He who kills with a sword must be killed with a sword. Here is the patience and faith of the saints. Once again, we have, a beast that has enormous control here, civil control over people. But it seems to say that one of the real reasons this beast has actually come into existence under the auspices of the devil, who is the ruler of the world, is for one reason, and for one reason only: the church. Okay, the church is here, the church exists, has been established by Jesus Christ. The devil doesn't like it, so we have a fourth beast that is, and that's what it's speaking of here, the fourth beast, which pits itself and all of its horns that comes later after the beast, which are various, we call them resurrections of the Roman Empire, then are going to make war with the church. The 1260 years here can refer to, as we see, the woman was taken into the wilderness in chapter 12, verse 6, into a place where she is prepared by God. This is different from the end time. For 1,260 days, and we see the church then had to leave the Roman Empire. It could not exist there. It could not keep God's laws and commandments. It could not be faithful. It could not keep the testimony of Jesus Christ. while it is still under the grip of the Roman Empire, it had to leave in there, and they did. Made war against the church. God took the church into, literally then, a wilderness place to where it could exist, and then he allowed the church to come out again and begin to preach the gospel and begin to expand and grow and teach as it has for the past several hundred years. But prior to that, they had war. People were persecuted. People were not allowed to hold to their faith and to their truth. And a great false church came along and began to also dominate. Now, that's also talked about in the latter part of Revelation 13, that particular beast. So we're going to have war. Who's the war really with? Let's go back to Daniel chapter 7 and verse 19. Similar language. It identifies it somewhat better here. All the way back in the book of Daniel, about the fourth beast. And then I wished to know the truth about the fourth beast, which was different from all the others. Exceedingly dreadful. Daniel 7:19. With teeth of iron and nails of bronze, which devoured, broke in pieces, trampled the residue with its feet. This looks like total control. Okay, that's how the Roman Empire operated. And those that came after. If you didn't go along with it, well, then you paid the consequences. And the ten horns that were on its head, and the other horn which came up, which before which three fell, namely the horn which had eyes and a mouth, which spoke pompous words, whose appearance was greater than his fellows. So we have another thing going on here, which I don't want to really get into, but you do find that we have another horn, which speaks as with a mouth, pompous words. Once again, something's coming out of a person's mouth here. You see what it is? Verse 21, I was watching, and the same horn was making war against the saints and prevailing against them. The saints did lose. They were not able to overcome this. Until the Ancient of Days came and a judgment was made in favor of the saints of the Most High, and the time came for the saints to possess the kingdom. So all of this is going to go on in one form or another all the way until the end. Verse 25. And he shall speak pompous words against the Most High, shall persecute the saints of the Most High, shall intend to change times and law. Then the saints shall be given into his hand for, there it is again, a time, times, and half a time. And this is the 1260 years in which the church was in the wilderness. We read in Revelation chapter 12, in this final times, time, and half a time, 3.5 years, literally, the church has to be removed from the presence of the serpent. Now, it doesn't say that you're being removed from the world, as in the rapture. It doesn't say you're going to be taken to a place of safety to escape harm physically. It does not say this. It doesn't say that you're being saved from an impending captivity. All of this has been assumed. I'm not saying that won't happen. I'm just saying you got to be careful what you're looking at here. And there may be something more pertinent here that you ought to take a look at in terms of what comes out of the mouth, in terms of what a flood is and what a flood does. And I want to give that to you now because you saw firsthand what a flood does. Okay? And it's not good. Nothing good about a flood in this sense. The serpent spewed the water out of his mouth, chapter 12, verse 15. We've already read that. After the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away by the flood. Is this physical? But the earth helped the woman. The earth opened its mouth, swallowed up the flood which the dragon spewed out of his mouth. The dragon was enraged with the woman. It doesn't say he was just sort of angry. He says enraged. We got to be careful about the enraging part. We better be careful about the anger part too, by the way. This is something we're not supposed to get into. It's not supposed to be a part of our emotional and mental makeup. You know, it's got to come under the control, our control and the control of God, to be able to not get into this. But here's the devil here, who now is enraged with the woman, shows who his enemy really is. So he goes to make war with the rest of her offspring. Now, what is happening? He does not want, in any sense, the church to succeed. If the church succeeds in the purpose that God gave the church, he's out of a job, he's out of a position, and he then is locked away. He knows that. The church, at any cost, cannot succeed. So he casts the water out of his mouth as a flood. What is this flood? Flood is a terrible thing. It comes in sometimes as a raging torrent, as we saw in Toowoomba and Grantham. You saw that. Sometimes slowly creeping up, as it did in Brisbane. It wrecks, it destroys, it kills people who are in its way, then it subsides, and then you're left with the biggest mess you ever saw that you've got to clean up. That's what floods do. In Brisbane, when it subsides, what's left is what was once the good topsoil from the Lockyer Valley, sometimes from the Downs, the Darling Downs, that produced food for us. What you see left in the wake of this flood is toxic sludge filled with sewage, bacteria that can make you sick, quite sick, chemicals that can hurt you. And when cleaning it out, you're warned to use protective clothing, but it's got to be cleaned out. Now, generally, what comes out of the mouth of the serpent is deception. All right, and when it comes out, when this deception comes out, this is exactly what happens. Oh, it subsides. And what are you left with? I think you're left with a lot of toxic waste. You got a lot of residue, a lot of things that you heard, a lot of things that you came in contact with that you're going to have a hard time getting out of your mind and having confidence as to where you are and what you're supposed to do. Oh, it takes a while to get over this. They tell the people in Brisbane it's going to be a long time, years before you recover from this. And you can have the confidence to go on and live where you're living. Hopefully, try to avoid it the next time. That's what floods do. Doesn't matter what kind of flood it is, that's what floods do. Let's talk about the waters and the flood. Revelation 7:15. Just a few scriptures. Let me go over them rather quickly here, if you'll bear with me. Then he said to me, "The waters which you saw where the harlot sits are peoples, multitudes, nations, and tongues." What's this? Just people, undefined as such, without borders, without nationality. It just says multitudes, nations, tongues, all kinds of people. Where the harlot has control. How does a harlot have control over anyone? A harlot entices with no sense of reasonableness whatsoever. No logic, just total enticement bearing upon one's senses, upon one's lusts. And people find they do things in ways that they never thought they would whenever you are controlled by a harlot. Book of Proverbs is very instructive on that. It says a man is reduced by a harlot to a crust of bread, it says. Shows you what it does to you. Now, this is very interesting. With the waters, with the flood. Psalm 18, verse 3. Verse 5, Psalm 18, verse 3 through 5. I will call upon the Lord who was worthy to be praised. So shall I be saved from my enemies. The pangs of death surrounded me, and the floods of ungodliness made me afraid. The floods of ungodliness, it's like a flood sometimes just really comes over. And man, what are you going to do? We did have fearful people when the floods just sort of came in. Indeed they were. The sorrows of Sheol surrounded me, or the grave, the snares of death confronted me. This is what it's like when a flood comes in. Now, what's he speaking about here? Floods of ungodliness, he says. Perhaps it could be understood in this way. Psalm 65, verse 7, it says, "You who still the noise of the seas, the noise of their waves, and the tumult of the peoples." This is very interesting. The tumult of the peoples here. Remember, they were defined as peoples, multitudes, nations, and tongues controlled by the harlot. The tumult. The tumult. You've never seen people who are gathered together in a group. You've seen this in some parts of the world. And they gather together for the sake of, the funerals, or for the sake of the fact of a Western camera crew that happens to be there, and they all gather and they do their chanting and so on. This is a tumult of people. A Westerner does not want to be there. That's a bad, bad place to be when you have just hordes of people who are rampaging, who are in a tumult, who are agitated. You get in the middle of this, it's not good. We saw even in England when Prince Charles and Camilla were driving down. I mean, they were attacked by some of their own subjects. Garbage can was thrown at them, and the police had to really get in there and stop this. You know, when you get agitated people, stirred up, moved, emotional, here's what we're talking about here. Psalm 93, verse 2. Your throne is established from of old. You are from everlasting. The floods have lifted up, O Lord. The floods have lifted up their voice. The floods lift up their waves. The Lord on high is mightier than the noise of many waters, than the mighty waves of the sea. Your testimonies are sure. Holiness adorns your house, O Lord, forever. It seems like more noise. The more noise and agitation there is, the less truth there is. That's simply the way the scriptures tend to read. Numbers 26, verse 10, when Korah and his group began to say certain things and spread it out, and they stood firm in opposition to Moses and some of the other elders of the Israelites. Numbers 26, verse 10, it says, "The earth opened its mouth and swallowed them up together with Korah, and the company died. And when the fire devoured 250 men, and they became a sign." Okay, you said the mouth swallowed up the flood. What does it do? Well, in this case, the earth literally did that. In the case over here in Revelation, the earth opens its mouth, swallows up the flood, which the dragon spews out of its mouth. Somehow God is able to diffuse the flood that comes out. God has ways of doing that. Now we live in a deceived world. The nature of it is very insidious. Matthew chapter 24, verse 10. Matthew 24, 10. Now, once again, Jesus is speaking about the end time. And then many shall be offended and will betray one another and will hate one another. Who's he talking about here? Well, when you betray somebody, you're part of them to start with, so you betray them. And then and many false prophets will rise up and deceive many. This is a religious thing here. And because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold. We live in a lawless world. And because of the world in which we live in, it is in darkness. It's going to be very difficult. He who endures to the end shall be saved. So we're talking about being saved here and enduring to the very end in a condition that's around us that is characterized as lawlessness. I think we understand that. We see it around us all the time. No law. People do whatever they want to do. And we are, unfortunately, we're affected by that. But he said, you got to endure to the end. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached into all the world as a witness to all the nations, and then the end shall come. Well, that is the end. And he who endures to the end shall be saved. So that's what you have to endure doing. You know, the world is in darkness. 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 6. For it is, this is a very interesting statement here, for it is the God, 2 Corinthians 4, 6, who commanded light to shine out of darkness, who has shown in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. Now, he is the light. He said that three times in the book of John, and he is the light of the world. But what happened on the first day of creation? What was created? You remember? Light. It says the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. Oh, a flood? Yeah. The same word that you find in Genesis 6 where you had another flood. Waters. Two waters here. One in chapter 1, one in chapter 6. Darkness was on the face of the deep. So what does God do? First thing, he pierces the darkness with light. And that's what it says here. He commanded the light to shine out of darkness, and so too did he send Jesus Christ into a world that is totally veiled in darkness. And if you're not going to be in darkness, then you have to follow that light. We read last night in our life and teachings class that the people in Galilee of the Gentiles, Zebulun and Naphtali, sat in darkness. Those who sat in darkness saw a great light. You ever sit in darkness before? You ever been in a cave? Some poor people have been in cave-ins before. What can you do? You sit. You can't move. There is no light unless you brought one with you. You are in total and complete darkness. You can do nothing. You are helpless until the light comes. We could not even have the creation that we see today until God penetrated the darkness with light. Number one, light had to come. Jesus Christ is the light who has come into the world. We need to have that light. And there's a whole pall of darkness in which the world lives in and exists. A time of lawlessness, as it says. Now, we have to live in that. We have to be protected from it. We have to follow the light. We have to follow Jesus Christ, who is that light. Now, there's something I want to point out to you in Matthew 24, verse 20, just down a bit. It says, verse 21, let's start there. Verse 21, and then there will be great tribulation, such as has not been since the beginning of the world, until this time, no, nor ever shall be. And unless those days were shortened, no flesh should be saved, but for the elect's sake, those days will be shortened. Then, if anyone says to you, look, here is the Christ, or there, do not believe it. For false Christ and false prophets will arise and show great signs and wonders to deceive, if possible, even the elect. Now, it gives us some assurance here that the elect would not be deceived. But if it were possible, these deceptions would be so great that even the elect would have otherwise been deceived. Why would a person believe in this kind of deception? Signs, wonders, otherwise, things that happen in this way? Why? People do this all the time. People, religious people, Church of God people, they want to believe a person is Elijah. They want to believe a person is a prophet. They want to believe a person is a witness. They want to believe a person, this person is right, more right. They want to believe this or some organization is greater, closer, whatever it is. Why do they do this? Why do they believe in a sign and a wonder? What if a person's, whatever claim they make, whatever sign they wonder, why? They want it to be true. Folks, think about this. People believe in fairy tales because they want them to be true. It's a lot easier than to face the stark brutality of the truth sometimes. So we create things to give ourselves some momentary comfort. It's false, so false it's not funny. And people are going to wind up one day realizing they've gone down a wrong road, and it's going to be disastrous for them. It really is. You don't want to let the facts get in the way of a good story, do you? Somebody said that one time. They do say that. Got to have a good story. Don't let the facts get in the way. The woman has to be taken out from the face of the serpent. Is it to a place? Maybe. Literally, to a place? Maybe. Oh, probably. I don't know that. But it has to happen because the deception will be great. Let's understand floods, folks. Let's understand floods in the way that the Bible means it. In the case of such deception that comes forth out of the mouth of one who speaks such things as to distort, as to lie, as to make it sound so true and to appear so good. These are lies. Let's understand that. People are going to believe them. That's the sad part. The elect hopefully can recover, will not believe them in the first place. The deception will be terrible. Can I just make that point? You haven't even begun to see the deception or hear the deception already. The deception will be terrible. Now, what do you do? I hope anybody knows when a flood's coming, what do you do? You better get on high ground. And if I can take that in the allegorical sense, I hear a lot of things being said today about the church. You ought to take the high ground. Stick with the truth. I don't get into stuff. And I'm not going to be let off. I refuse to be. Simply by what somebody says. I hope you do. I'm not going to believe in fairy tales. I'm not going to believe in what somebody tells me. I was taught not to do that 50 years ago when the man says, don't believe me. I said, I appreciate that. I'll check it out for myself. And I did. And not being, or being somewhat youthful, I did find out a few things on my own, the hard way. You tend to do this, don't you? You don't always listen to somebody. But he said to do that. Okay? We've been down that road. A lot of us have been. And we prove things. But I can't stake my salvation on somebody's word. Just what they say. I will not do that. I will not sit and listen to rumor. I will not sit and listen to what somebody says and make decisions that will affect my life. I will not make decisions that will affect my eternal life based upon what somebody comes along and he wants to tell me. There's a problem with that. I hope you see the problem, immediately see the problem with this. And we need to have a little bit more solid, the stability and maturity than that. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. I'm saying, none of this is over yet. It's going to continue to happen. We read here in Revelation 12, it's really going to happen to the point to where you got to be removed from the presence of the serpent. That's how bad it's going to get. 2 Thessalonians 2, if I can turn there and finish up here for you. And to show you what God is looking for. Well, here we go. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. The coming of the lawless one, verse 8, will be revealed, whom the Lord will consume with the breath of his mouth and destroy with the brightness of his coming. And he'll show the darkness for what it is. And the coming of the lawless one is according to the working of Satan with all power, signs, and lying wonders. Why are people going to believe that? They want to. They just really want to. It's going to really do something for them. With all unrighteous deception among those who perish because they did not receive the love of the truth that they might be saved. Now, I gave a sermon on this, how to become deception-proof, and that is, you got to have a love of the truth, even if it goes against you, if it goes against everything you want, against everything you desire, everything you hope. You got to choose the truth instead. And you got to be brutal with yourself. You can't let yourself get away from anything. And if you do, you're susceptible to what somebody else is going to come along and tell you. They did not receive a love of the truth, and for this reason, God will send them a strong delusion that they should believe the lie. It's going to be sent, and you better believe the truth. Stay with truth, truth that you know, truth that you've proven, and you stay with it. If a person is going to be swayed by reports, what someone says, third, fourth, fifth-hand information, and make important decisions, how able is that person to discern truth? You say, well, I don't know the truth. Yes, you do know the truth. Don't tell me you can't know the truth. You can. Jesus Christ is the light. And if you are so tuned into him and you have been dealing with your own heart, you've been dealing with your own tendencies, your own human nature, through the Spirit of the Almighty God, and you know that, you're going to recognize untruths when they come at you. You simply will. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 13, let's conclude with till we all come to the unity of the faith and the knowledge of the Son of God, to a perfect man, to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ, that we should no longer be children, tossed to and fro, carried about with every wind of doctrine by the trickery of men, in the cunning craftiness of deceitful plotting, but speaking the truth in love, may grow up into all things into him who is the head, Christ. That's where we're going. In verse 21, if indeed you have heard him and have been taught by him as the truth is in Jesus. It's not my truth. It's the truth as is in Jesus. He can disagree with me just like that. I can have an opinion about something. I can have an opinion about myself and think it's so absolutely true and so absolutely right. And Jesus Christ can disagree with me. I got to be in tune with that. I've got to speak and teach the truth as it is in Jesus Christ. I hope you will too. I hope you believe that. These are eternal decisions, by the way, that he's asking us to make. It is important. I want to present that to you. A flood is going to come, and it's going to be bad, like the flood we saw. But it's going to be a spiritual flood. Let us remember the high ground of Jesus Christ, if I can put it that way. Thank you very much for coming today.